Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on inflation when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt," unquote. 17 words. And that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. It's public business that is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit, credit cards, debt, and usury. Well, back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and the clad coin or currency in circulation. And you know, that's true. When we're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries, that's true. But out here in the real world, out here in the real marketplace, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper money. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for you and I to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and our politicians back in the 1930s take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. Those politicians knew and knew full well that in order to subjugate a free people, that they must first take away their gold and silver coin to take away the people's property and property rights, to destroy the people's property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain those rights, those duties, those capacities that we had, then you and I must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. Now, if you'd like more information about my private business school, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first? Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Now, it's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and it's free of charge. Why don't you call right now? The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, remember, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time I said human beings cannot learn from their mistakes. Now, it's true that a few of us do, but by and large, human beings are motivated by the course of least resistance. And the course of least resistance in today's modern economy, today's modern technological society, is credit cards, checks, and commercial paper. So, we all take advantage of these easy-to-use credit devices. And we pay usury and interest. We subscribe to a government that charges us interest on our income tax when we don't pay them enough. We subscribe to this thing called usury and interest, even though 65% of us go to church, 65% of us are religious, 65% of us claim that we're followers of God and Christ and the Bible, which, by the way, God, Christ, and the Bible forbade, prohibited, usury in any form in the scripture, in the Bible. So we go to church and then we join the building fund. You remember that? They sent you this little piece of paper, this little card, and said, hey, fill this out and pledge so much for the church building fund. You went to the bank, borrowed the money, you're paying interest in usury, which is prohibited in the Bible, and then you sign your name to a piece of paper and agree to pay the interest in usury, or at least your portion of the church building fund. Now, over the past century, there have become, or there has developed, a number of contemporary economic myths. And I thought I'd start today's program by taking a look at these economic myths. We benefit from inflation, and that's why we not only tolerate it, we participate in it, and then we encourage it. It's not because we don't know that it's wrong or that it's bad or we don't like it. Nobody likes it when the price of gasoline goes to $3 a gallon, but we all love it when we get a 25 or 50 cent an hour raise in our paychecks. We all know that the rise in property values of 10, 15, 20% a year can't continue forever. We all know that. But boy, we sure love it when we close on a house and we just made $150,000 profit. We love the benefits that come from these pernicious, evil, wicked activities. It's like the pleasure and the thrill and the joy that you receive from Flo's Whorehouse and one of Flo's Choice Girls. But of course, you don't like the crabs, gonorrhea, syphilis, AIDS, genital herpes, or genital warts that you get from Flo's Whorehouse. We like the benefits. We don't like the side effects. And out of that, some economic myths have occurred. Now, inflation hasn't been altogether bad to us. While it's true we're suffering from $3 a gallon gas, we weren't suffering from the real inflation-driven price of gasoline from 1950 to 2000. We enjoyed the benefits of having cheap energy. Now, when we compare the prices that we pay today in 2005 with the prices that we paid in 1950 or 1940 or 30 or 20, we say, oh my God, the price of gasoline in 1927 was 17 cents a gallon, and look at it today, it's $3. But at that same period of time, you were working for a dollar a day back in 1927, and today you're working for $100 a day. Now, what does that $100 a day buy in today's inflated dollars compared to what did your $1 a day buy back in 1927 in 1927 dollars and 1927 goods? Well, listen to this. Why would people believe on its face that there's a myth the cost of living has steadily risen through the 20th century, especially the last few decades? The cost of living? Now listen to these words now. Underline them. It's the cost of living. The cost of living has steadily risen through the 20th century. No, it hasn't. The cost of living has gone down throughout the 20th century. Inflation has gone up. Cost of living has not. And it's one of the benefits that we derived from inflation. Our bankers, our politicians, promised us that there were benefits from deficit spending, Keynesian economics, evolutionary philosophy. They promised us. They delivered on some of those promises. So when you hear someone say that the cost of living has steadily risen through the 20th century, and especially in the last few decades, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, don't you believe it? It's not true. I'm going to show you that. So why would people believe this on its face? Just look around. The prices of most things today are higher than they used to be. Now, of course, some of this is inflation. But even if you discount the inflation, many things cost more real dollars today than they used to. Now, does this mean that the cost of living has gone up? No, it has not. And don't forget the earnings side. Don't we want to know some sort of comparison between wage levels and prices? Isn't what really matters how much our wages can actually buy? If wages are way up, higher prices may not be that big a deal. So the ultimate measure of the cost of consumption goods is the labor, the amount of time that it takes you to purchase them. A pair of pants might cost $20. But if the average industrial wage is $2 an hour, then those are more expensive than if the average industrial wage is $10 an hour. Five times more expensive, as a matter of fact. So when we look at it this way, the real cost of living has dropped very significantly and very consistently over the course of the 20th century, over the past 100 years, and especially over the last few decades of the 20th century. So let's take a look at the changes in labor time cost versus the cost of various consumer goods. For instance, a half gallon of milk back in 1920, if you've got a pen and paper, write this down. You want to write down 1920, 1950, 1980, and 2000. Four columns. Now put a half gallon of milk in 1920, took 37 minutes. 37 minutes of your work, your labor, to buy a half a gallon of milk. But by 1950, it only took 16 minutes of your labor. By 1980, it only took 9 minutes of your labor. Today, it only takes 7 minutes of your labor. So it's gone from 37 minutes in 1920 down to 7 minutes today. Inflation paid off as it relates to the price of milk. Let's try bread. A 1 pound loaf of bread back in 1920 cost you 13 minutes of labor. In 1950, it cost you 6 minutes of labor, about half as much. By 1980, it took 4 minutes of labor to buy a 1 pound loaf of bread. Today, it takes about 3.5 minutes to buy a loaf of bread. Now let's take a look at our gasoline. Now remember, gasoline in 1920 wasn't a common item. And it took you 32 minutes of your labor, 32 minutes, half an hour, to buy 1 gallon of gasoline. By 1950, it was down to 11 minutes. By 1980, it was 10 minutes. And the latest, that is, as of 2000, it was 5.7 minutes. But now that it's gone up to $3 a gallon, it's back up to 11 minutes. So it now takes you 11 minutes to earn a gallon of gas, which is the same amount of labor that you were expending in 1950. Now let's take 100 miles of air travel. In 1930, it would have taken you 12 hours and 46 minutes to earn enough money to fly on an airplane for 100 air miles. By 1950, you had to work 4 hours and 7 minutes. 4 hours to travel 100 miles. By 1980, it was an hour and a half. By the year 2000, it was 1 hour and 2 minutes. The price of air travel has not gone up, it has gone down. Now let's take a look at a 3-minute coast-to-coast long-distance call. In 1920, you had to work 30 hours to make a 3-minute call, coast-to-coast. In 1950, you had to work 1 hour and 44 minutes, about an hour and 3/4, to make a 3-minute coast-to-coast long-distance call. By 1980, it was 11 minutes. The latest is 2 minutes, and I reported this to you just the other day. I don't know if I'm unique, but our long-distance service through AT&T is 5 cents a minute. So a 60-minute radio program, which I'm making right now, 60-minute radio program and a nickel a minute, I mean, they might charge me 50 cents to log on, but then it costs me $3 for the 30 minutes. I mean, the 60 minutes in this case, 60-minute broadcast only costs $3. Now, that's pretty phenomenal. The benefits that come from inflation have a two-edged sword. Not only did prices go up, the absolute cost of gasoline has gone up over the years. There's no doubt about that. But the absolute wage that you earn has gone up also. Now, of course, we have more taxes. Now, one of the things that makes the standard of living poorer today, the reason that it takes a man and his wife both working today to earn the same standard of living as my dad could furnish his family in 1955 is taxes. Taxes. Let me show you what happened to you with taxes. When you started paying Social Security back in 1935, you paid 1%. That's 1.5% from you and 1.5% from your employer. 1% of your wages. In those days, in the 1930s, you were making about $1 an hour. $8 a day. So you were paying 1% of that $8 a day. Today you're making $100 a day, but you're paying 16%. You pay about 6 or 8% and your employer pays, well, I think he pays a little over half now, 10% from your employer. And people look at that and they say, well, see, my employer, he has to pay that half of that Social Security tax. Let me clue you in here, boys and girls, as an old-timey businessman. Let me assure you that as a businessman, I never paid 1 cent of any of my employees' Social Security. Not a penny. I never paid one dime toward my employees' unemployment insurance. Not a dime. And I'm here to tell you that General Motors, General Electric, Enron, or any other major corporation that's in business today is not paying one penny, not one red cent, toward your Social Security, toward your retirement. Nothing, not a penny. All they're doing is jacking the prices up on the goods and services that they sell and pass it on to you, the consumer. The corporation McDonald's making a hamburger today isn't charging you any more for that hamburger today than they did in 1930. A hamburger in 1930 cost a nickel. A hamburger in 2005 costs a nickel. The other $1.34 that you pay is tax. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, there's a couple other items in here. 100 kilowatts of electricity. In 1920, you had to work 13 hours and 36 minutes to buy 100 kilowatt hours of electricity. But in 1950, you only had to work 2 hours. By 1980, you only had to work 45 minutes. Today, you only have to work 38 minutes. And if we look at computers, you know, the computing power of your computer in 1920 was non-applicable because we didn't have them. That's not quite true. We did have calculating machines. We had adding machines. You could add and subtract. But by 1950, it took 515,000 lifetimes to do 1 MPS of computing. By 1980, it was 41 weeks and 16 hours. And today, it's 9 minutes. I can remember buying our very first computer at Barrister's Inn for $5,000 back in 1983. It was an Apple. $5,000. Had a daisy wheel printer, printed about 170 or 80 words a minute. It was a pretty fast printer. Today, we have a computer in here that we do our work on, and I think it cost $1,000. And I think Dirk said that it was something like 10 times faster or something like that. 10 times faster and 500% cheaper. Imagine that. Inflation has been a great boon in technology. It has been of benefit to us. Well, so far. Now, as I said, there are some side effects. And do you remember a few days ago I told you about my hospital visit and the doctor came in and he said, oh, you're going to like this. Gave me a shot of morphine. And boy, he was right. I liked it. Now, the doctor's name was Sansoni. And Dr. Sansoni said, we don't want to give you too much of this morphine because the more we give you, the more addicted you become to it. And at some point in time, you will become so addicted to this morphine, you won't be able to kick the habit. You'll become a heroin addict. That's the side effect. Everybody loves morphine. Nobody likes to be an addict. Everybody loves alcohol. Nobody likes an alcoholic. Everybody loves drugs. We just don't like drug addicts. And those are the side effects that come from the excessive use of money. Money, hyperinflation, is the ultimate end result that comes from fiat currency. It's always happened everywhere else. What makes you think it's going to be any different here? Now, these effects, these side effects, it's like building on the beach. My God, Biloxi, Mississippi, if there is a better place to live than on the beach at Biloxi, I don't know where it's at. Oh, maybe in Hawaii. On the beach in Hawaii. It's a wonderful place. I don't deny that. But you can't deny, boys and girls, that hurricanes exist and tidal waves exist. And in Hawaii, there have been tidal waves 1,000 feet high on the bluffs around Kauai, the island. 1,000 feet, 1,000 foot tidal wave up the side of a mountain where the bluff, you know, drops off into the ocean. Well, that tells me that those Hawaiian islands are a neat place to live, but, you know, there are tidal waves, and every once in a while a tidal wave comes in, kills 50 or 100 people. Now, we haven't seen that 1,000 footer for a long time. But the fact that there was one at some time in the past tells us that there's going to be another one at some time in the future. So when you read in Bible prophecy where it says flee to the mountains, you know, just before this end time, I don't think God was whistling Dixie. And you just saw that over in the Indian Ocean, you know, in Indonesia and Thailand, Sri Lanka and India, where that tidal wave killed 300,000 people. Now, boys and girls, tidal waves do happen. And there's going to be more in the future. So we take advantage of these benefits. Morphine is a benefit. When you've got pain, let me tell you, morphine's the greatest thing since sliced white bread. Too much of it, or the failure to control it, can be fatal. Now, George Washington made an observation one time. He said, government is like a fire. If you can keep it under control, it will warm you and take care of you. But if it gets out of control, it will burn your house to the ground. And boys and girls, the government here in the United States is out of control. Pure and simple, it's out of control. Now, you can sit here and say, well, I'm going to vote different in the next election and we'll see if we can't get it back under control. I've never seen an example in all of human history where man, I can see three examples in the Bible where God came along and made some meaningful changes, at least twice he did. But I've never seen an example in all of human history where man has ever taken a look at where he is, where he has been, and where he is headed, and then made a meaningful change and prevented the ultimate catastrophe. I haven't seen that. There are two examples in the Bible where that has occurred. One example in the Bible where it almost occurred. You see it with Jonah and Nineveh. He went there with a message. He said, shape up. They did. Prevented their destruction. Josiah shaped up. God said, I'm not going to destroy the kingdom for 40 years during your lifetime. And then there was an opportunity for the people at Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, had there been 10 righteous in the city, God would have spared the place for the sake of 10 righteous. He only could find 4, so he saved the 4 out of the city, and the rest of them perished. Three examples in the Bible Now, if you leave the Bible out, there are no historical examples. So I don't hold out much hope for the United States of America to take stock of where we were in 1781, where we are today in 2005, and where this is going to take us unless we make some very sudden, very meaningful changes. I take a look at New Orleans, and I say, well, we knew that the big one was coming. We could have spent $15 billion, $1 billion a year over the past 15 years, and we could have fortified the city and we could have saved it. We didn't, and now it's going to cost $500 billion. I'll tell you, boys and girls, it'll cost you $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion because the government is going to rebuild New Orleans, and it always costs 2 or 3 times as much, and you'll get about half as much for your money. People don't learn. I mentioned that in the last program. Now, people are motivated by 5 motivators, and that is vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. 5 motivators of human nature. You're motivated by those 5 motivators just like I am. Now, if we had our wits, if we had our senses about us, we would take a look at where we are today, where history has been in the past, and what the future probably holds based upon the history of the past, and say, you know, we need to make some changes. I live my life that way, and sometimes I have to make some hard choices that I really don't like to make. Truth be known, I'd just soon shoot up with the dope. I think drugs are great. If God made anything better than pig to eat, I think he kept it for himself. But I don't eat pig because I can see from the past that it causes disease, it causes side effects. I can see that now in the present, and so I look to the future and I say, you know, it'd be better for me if I didn't eat pig. I smoked for many years. I took a look at the history of smoking. I took a look at where I was with smoking and the number of people getting lung cancer, and I said, I think I'll quit. So for 40 years, I've denied myself the pleasure of smoking. And let me tell you, smoking is very pleasurable. If it wasn't, people wouldn't smoke. People aren't running around cutting themselves, you know. People will take the course of least resistance. What doesn't cause pain, suffering, and anguish is what we want to do. So if you have to make a choice of self-denial, if you have to make a choice with pain, you have to make a choice and do without something, if there's any way that you can circumvent that pain, suffering, and anguish, you're going to do it. It's just the way human nature works. All right, so inflation then is pleasurable. Inflation produces credit. It satiates our desires today. I can sign on the dotted line and drive out with this new Ford Explorer today. I don't have to wait. I don't have to sacrifice. I don't have to do without. Well, yeah, I've got to pay interest. Yeah, this car is going to be worth less when I drive it off the showroom floor than it is today when I buy it. It's going to have no real value. It's always going to be a liability, but God, my friends are just going to be so envious of me. See, that's jealousy. You're motivated by jealousy. And you want your friends to envy you. You want your friends to look up to you. You want them to see you as, wow, look at that George Gordon driving down the road in that new Ford Explorer. Why, that guy's got so much money he didn't care about $3 gas. Look at that guy, Gordon. You know, we're all motivated by the same motivators. Now, I don't have a new Ford Explorer. I've denied myself the pleasures of that car because I looked into the future and I said, no, I see $6 a gallon gas coming up. I see peak oil coming up. I see war coming up. I see some problems coming up that I want to be prepared for. So I think I'll stay off the automobile and concentrate on more toilet paper, maybe a couple, 3 jars of strawberry jam. So this is a myth. It's a myth that the 20th century has produced a higher cost of living. The cost of living has gone down, boys and girls. Inflation's up. Debt is up. Hyperinflation is on the horizon. We have not paid the penalty yet, boys and girls, for the excesses of the New Deal, the Fair Deal, the Great Society, for the Clintons and the Bushes. We haven't paid the penalty yet. It's there, though. It's like smoking a pack of Camel Studs for years and years. You don't have cancer yet, but it's coming. The health effects that come from smoking, the deleterious effects that come from smoking, don't happen to you with the first pack. It's way down the road. You get to have all this pleasure first. And then at the end of the pleasure comes the side effects. Then comes the debilitating disease. Now we're on the verge from this hyperinflation, or with hyperinflation, of paying the penalty for paper money. Paying the penalty for violating the law that said thou shalt not steal. Paying the penalty for buying all those stocks and bonds and all those negotiable instruments. And all those pension plans, you know, like you United pilots and you United employees that just got screwed out of your pensions. Hey, listen, all the rest of you workers out there have that to look forward to. It's not unique just to Delta or United Airlines. Every worker in America is going to watch as his pension plan that he worked for, paid into, believed in, is swept away, and he's left with nothing. Just like the people on the Gulf Coast get to go back and look at their houses, all of their wealth, everything that they'd worked for all of their lives, swept away. It's gone. Now that's the penalty that we're going to pay for these broken laws. Hang on. Be right back. Now you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law Hour website is updated every week, and it has our radio log schedule and archives on the website, georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, economics, history, politics, religion, news, and current events. 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website, georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Remember, we were talking about the downers, the gloom and doomers. I've had people say, God, Gordon, I almost hate to tune into your program. You're so full of gloom and doom. Well, I don't really see gloom and doom there. You see, if I tell you that the Titanic is going to sink on its maiden voyage and you ought to stay off the ship, that doesn't sound like gloom and doom to me. For all the people that were not riding on the Titanic, I think that it was, happy days are here again. Same thing's true here with heroin and drugs, you know. I think that if you stay off of cigarettes, alcohol, heroin, and drugs, you'll be healthier, happier, wealthier, and wiser as a result of it. I haven't noticed any happy alcoholics or any successful drug addicts, have you? If you know of any successful drug addicts, let me know how they succeeded at it. Hell, maybe I'd get onto more morphine. And maybe I can make $1 million sucking up morphine in a drunken stupor 24 hours a day. Maybe I haven't got the right technique. Now, I haven't observed that. So, since I haven't observed it, but what I have observed is that hard work produces wealth. Indolence produces poverty. So, I come along and say, by the sweat of your face shall you eat your bread. I saw that in the Bible one day, and I said, well, if that's the lot of man, I guess I ought to get out there and get with it. So, I get out there and I work hard and I sweat a lot. You work out in the hot sun digging a post hole, let me tell you, you'll perspire. I don't have any air conditioning. So as a result of that, I get out and I work hard and I produce a bunch. And by working hard and producing a bunch, I produce some wealth. And I get to enjoy that wealth. That's a lot of fun. I like that. So let's take a look now at specie. You ever heard of this word specie? S-P-E-C-I-E. It's the opposite of fiat currency. Specie is gold and silver. Hard money. It's wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Now, our founding fathers, you know, guys like Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, these guys were all specie people. And there was another bunch of people called bankers, and they were all in favor of paper money. Just like the bankers were in favor of paper money, the politicians were in favor of paper money from 1690. You know, until the revolution in 1781, when in May of 1781, remember that famous month, May 1781, American money ceased to pass as money. There just came a point in time when people wouldn't take it anymore. So our founding fathers learned from that. It's one of those rare events in history where guys like George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and John Adams and others, you know, the George Mason, so they looked at the mess around them and said, you know, there's got to be a better way than this. So they went to specie. They went to gold and silver coin, and in 1792 they enacted what was called the Coinage Act of 1792. America, between 1787 and 1950, became the wealthiest, most powerful political, military, and economic power the world has ever seen, including the Roman Empire, in 150 years, or less. Now, from about 1950 to 2005, in 55 years, we threw it all away. We were the world's number one creditor nation. Today we're the world's number one debtor nation. It doesn't take long for a rich person to squander his wealth. It takes a long time for a poor person to work hard and to amass a lot of wealth. Making money, creating wealth, is a lot harder than squandering it, spending it, and throwing it away on whores and drugs. And that's why when people inherit money, they typically squander their inheritance by throwing it away on whores and drugs. Solomon made an observation. He said, you know, after me comes the fool. Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived. He built great projects, became the wealthiest man in the world. I mean, he did some great things. And he said, listen, I'm going to die, and when I die, my kid's going to inherit everything, and what's he going to do with it? He's as dumb as a box of rocks. And sure enough, his boy's name was Rehoboam. And he went out and he told the people, he said, you think my father chastised you with whips? I'll chastise you with scorpions. Fomented a rebellion, a civil war, split the country in two, and he ended up flat-ass broke. Broken kingdom. So, as I said, human beings have a hard time learning. So let's take a look at this thing called specie. You know, if as I watched you paying for your groceries down at the supermarket, and I saw the cashier scan one can of corn twice, then I saw her put her thumb on the scale with your bananas to increase the weight of the bananas, and then leave out a can of soup as she bagged up your order, I would feel obligated to tell you that you were being robbed. I would feel like I had an obligation to tell you. Now today, we Americans are being robbed by a very clever banking strategy. And in this program, I'm going to demonstrate how, with the issuance of this paper money, the banks have come to own America. And this strategy has been well orchestrated by very powerful men in high places in our government and in high places in business and banking since the commencement of our great nation back in 1787. This isn't something that began with Bill Clinton. It's been going on for 200 years. Now today, as I speak, unless we realize our precarious position, that we're in danger of losing not only our property, but our liberty as well, I believe that recognizing the existence of this problem is one of the first steps in correcting it. And it's with this in mind that I have brought this to your attention. Now, I may be a doomsayer, you know. You may sit there and say, God, I hate to listen to you because you don't have any good news. I've got nothing but good news. The Law Hour and Editorial Review has nothing but good news, telling you that morphine will cause you great anguish, pain, suffering, and misery if you become addicted to it. That's not naysaying. That's not bad. That's good. Well, it's good for all the people that pay attention and listen. Telling you to stay off the Titanic is good for you. That's not naysaying. That's not bad. I can't control Captain Smith. I can't control the course of the Titanic. I could tell you, don't get on that thing. It's going to sink. So when I come to you and tell you that you're on the verge of hyperinflation, that's good news. That's the best thing that you've heard all week. Get ready for it. When the Weather Service said, listen, there's a Category 5 storm out in the Gulf of Mexico headed for Biloxi, Mississippi, that was the best news you people could have heard. You people in San Francisco are never going to hear the Weather Service come out and say, in about 5 days there's going to be a number 8 on the Richter scale earthquake in San Francisco. You people in San Francisco are not going to hear a word. The first indication that you have is that the birds will stop singing. When the birds stop singing, grab your ass. Now, a warning is not naysaying. A warning is not bad. It's the best thing can happen to you. And that's why Matthew 24, Mark 13, and Luke 21 are good news. Good news. God came to you and he said, now listen, boys and girls, gather around and listen to my words. Because here's what's coming down. And it's not just me saying it. Listen to the words of Salmon P. Chase. He was the Secretary of the Treasury from 1861 to 1864. Salmon P. Chase. He said, my agency in promoting the passage of the National Bank Act was the greatest financial mistake of my life. It has built up a monopoly which affects every interest in this country. It should be repealed. But before that can be accomplished, the people will be arrayed on one side and the banks on the other in a contest such as we have never seen before in this country. Listen to Mayor Rothschild. This is the Rothschild Brothers of London. On June the 25th, 1863, in a letter to the New York Banking Association, Bankers Association in New York, here's what the Rothschild Brothers said. Quote, the United States Banking Act of 1863 has been drawn up on the plan formulated here by the British Bankers Association and by that association recommended to our American friends as one that, if enacted into law, would prove highly profitable to the banking fraternity throughout the world. There has never been such an opportunity for capitalists to accumulate money as that presented by this National Banking Act of the United States. It gives the National Bank almost complete control of the national government's finance. The few who can understand the system will either be so interested in its profits, or they will be so dependent upon its favors, that there will be no opposition from that class, while on the other hand, the great body of the people in general, who are mentally incapable of comprehending the tremendous advantage that capital derives from the system, will bear its burdens without complaint, and perhaps without even suspecting that the system is inimical to their best interests. Unquote. Hey, these boys don't even hide it. Now, you don't see that published in USA Today or in the Wall Street Journal. But coming to you and telling you that the banking interests, along with the politicians and the big multinational corporations, do not have your best interests at heart, you waitresses, you lumberjacks, you truck drivers, you plumbers and carpenters, and you oil field workers, you are bearing the burden, but you do not share in the benefits. Franklin D. Roosevelt, on November the 21st, 1933, his first year in office, November 21st, 1933, Frank said, "The real truth of the matter is, as you and I both know, that a financial element in the large centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson." Unquote. Now, Andrew Jackson, on December the 5th, 1836, in his 8th annual message to the Congress of the United States, said this. He said, "It is apparent from the whole context of the Constitution, as well as the history of the time which gave birth to it, that was the purpose of the convention to establish a currency consisting of the precious metals. These were adopted by a permanent rule excluding the use of a perishable medium of exchange, or the still more pernicious expedient of paper currency." Boys and girls, the people who want paper money are the politicians, the bankers, and the big businessmen. Now, our founding fathers, that is, the George Washingtons and the Ben Franklins and the Thomas Jeffersons, who fought the Revolution, who framed the Declaration of Independence, who argued over the Constitution of the United States, banned paper money, and they told us all plainly, it's bad for us. God Almighty told you that unjust weights and balances, paper money, stocks and bonds, are bad for you. They weren't whistling Dixie through a straw hat. Now, you've been told. You've been warned. Now, how many drug addicts out there have been told just say no? How many alcoholics out there have been told alcohol is bad for your health? How many smokers out there have been told smoking causes lung cancer? You see, there's always another side. There's the tobacco industry that says, oh, no, there's no scientific evidence that smoking causes cancer. And, of course, the smoker who is addicted to nicotine wants to hear those words. Smoking does not cause cancer. Smoking does not cause cancer. That's what he wants to hear. And he's going to believe what he wants to hear. People who are in debt and have mortgages want to hear, borrow more. The interest rate will never get lower. Take advantage. Use the money. Leverage it out and take your profits. That's what they want to hear. They don't want to hear some klutz come along here and say, pay your debts. Pay cash. Don't pay usury and interest. It's bad for you. They don't want to hear that. And that's why human beings can't learn. Now, a dog is smarter than a human. He doesn't want to get his nose rubbed in his own poop a second time, so he stops doing it on the floor. A dog can learn. Human beings can't. Even though, I tell you, Thomas Jefferson in 1819, after he had left the White House. Thomas Jefferson said, "The eyes of our citizens are not sufficiently upon or open to the true cause of our distress. They ascribe them to everything but their true cause, and that is the banking system." Boys and girls, you all have credit cards and checking accounts. You don't want to hear that from a former president of the United States, that your problems here in the United States, the outsourcing of your employment overseas to China and India and other countries, and the higher cost of living and hyperinflation on the horizon. You don't want to hear that. You want to listen to the politicians and the bankers that tell you the economy is growing at 3.4%. Hurricane Katrina will have no effect on the economy. Go out and buy another SUV, and while you're at it, buy a second house. Go into debt further. Stimulate the economy. Take your profits. That's what you want to hear, and that's what you're going to hear. Here's Woodrow Wilson. He said, "Concentration of power always precedes the destruction of human liberty." Thomas Jefferson in 1814 said, "I am an enemy to all banks discounting bills or notes for anything but coin." You got that? I'm against banks issuing paper money unless they got coin to back it up. I just saw a number the other day. I think it was in Chapman's International Forecaster. They have 0.8% reserves. The bank. That is your bank. If all of you depositors go into the bank and say, "Give me my money," they've got enough to pay 0.8%. They used to have 5%. The reserve requirement used to be 18%. I can remember 20, 30 years ago, 18%. Then they lowered it to 5. Now it's down to 0.8%. For practical purposes, there is no reserves in your bank. Reserves of what? Reserves of fiat $100 bills. There isn't any coin in there. Now, a few of you could cash in today, convert to gold and silver, bury it in a hole in the ground, wait for the collapse, and then come back into the marketplace after the collapse and buy it all up cheap at distressed prices. There are a few people that do that. There are people like Warren Buffett, Donald Trump. Those are the kind of people that are going to do just that. Now, the real truth of the matter, remember Franklin Roosevelt, is that the government is owned. Yeah, the government is owned by these banking interests. The banking interests, boys and girls, buy the politicians. They buy your votes. You vote for the people that are going to give you the most. That's what all democracies do. The politician that promises you free drugs for the elderly, every old person in the country is going to vote for that because that's a benefit to them. And you people up in, you working people, the few of you that are left in Seattle and Portland are going to pay for that. Doesn't sound good to you, but it sounds good to those that are collecting. Now, the Federal Reserve is one of the most corrupt institutions the world has ever seen. There is not a man within the sound of my voice who does not know that this nation is run by international bankers. The guy that said that was Congressman Louis T. McFadden, before they killed him. Louis had quite a bit to say. Thomas Jefferson said stock dealers and banking companies, by the aid of a paper system, are enriching themselves to the ruin of our country and swaying the government by their possession of the printing presses, which their wealth commands, and by other means not always honorable to the character of our countrymen, said Thomas Jefferson. And Sir Josiah Stamp, the president of the Bank of England back in the 1920s, here's what he said. Here's an insider's confession. He said, "Banking was conceived in iniquity, and it was born in sin. The bankers own the earth. Take it away from them, but leave them the power to create deposits, and with the flick of the pen, they will create enough deposits to buy it all back again. However, if you take it away from them, and all the great fortunes disappear, and they ought to disappear, for this would be a happier and a better world to live in. But if you wish to remain the slaves of bankers and pay the cost of your own slavery, let the bankers continue to create money and to control credit. Well, that's what Alan Greenspan is. The Federal Reserve is a private banking consortium run by Alan Greenspan, appointed by the President of the United States. Isn't that just special? It's a special corporation created back in 1913. It is not a government institution. It's not a government agency. It's a private banking cartel. The most sinister and antisocial feature about bank deposit money is that it has no existence. The banks owe the public for a total amount of money which does not exist. In buying and selling implemented by check transactions, there is a mere change in the party to whom the money is owed by the banks. As the one depositor's account is debited, the other is credited, and the banks can go on owing for it for all time. The whole profit of the issuance of money has provided the capital of the great banking business as it exists today, starting with nothing whatsoever of their own. They have now gotten the whole world into their debt irredeemably by a trick. This money comes into existence every time the banks lend and disappears every time the debt is repaid to them. So that if industry tries to repay, the money of the nation disappears. This is what makes prosperity so dangerous, as it destroys money just when it is most needed and precipitates a slump. There's nothing left now for us but to ever get deeper and deeper into debt to the banking system in order to provide the increasing amounts of money that the nation requires for its expansion and growth. An honest money system is the only alternative. So says Frederick Soddy, Nobel Prize winner, 1921, in Wealth, Virtual Wealth and Debt. God prohibits this banking industry that we all participate in. I always ask people when I speak to audiences, I say, how many of you people out here have a checking account? Can I see your hands? And I raise my hand, and everybody in the audience raises their hands. Yes, I have a checking account. How many of you have credit cards, major credit cards? I'm not just talking about the store credit cards, but I mean MasterCard, Visa, Discover. Almost everybody raises their hands. Boys and girls, that's the cause of inflation right there. Checking accounts and credit cards. And it's exacerbated by the politicians and the big businesses. They all work together to encourage you and I to commit acts of crime and immorality. And of course, you and I have to pay for it. And we are paying for it. But don't ever forget, boys and girls, that you and I are the proximate cause of our own injury. We're doing it to ourselves. We'll be back with the final concluding installment to this story on inflation, speaking about specie next time. That's tomorrow night. Same time, same station here on the Law Hour. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact desk. For more information, just go to our homeschooling page. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. Hey, we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, of course. So thanks for listening, and until then, good night, friends.